You're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY, Portland at 91.1 and 107.1 FM, and in Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Radio is yours. What is success? What does it mean to be successful? Is it all about money? Or is it all about love, fame, attention? Or is it some secret other thing that we've yet to explore? I'm Brianna Wheeler, and I want to know what success means to the people that I think are successful. Because success can mean so many different things to so many different people. So let's discover a few new ways together. This is Success Stories. Hello, and welcome to Success Stories, a 30-minute radio program and accompanying podcast featuring Portlanders who have found success in unique and inspiring ways and have shifted Portland's economic, creative, and cultural landscape in the process. Today, we're talking to creative multi-hyphenate event wizard and perhaps most notably, the co-founder of Kickstand Comedy, Dylan Reif. Pew, 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 pew. How's it going?
I wish this could happen every day. This is amazing. Thanks so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here and chat.
Of course. When I was putting together this show initially, and I was kind of making that dream list of guests, you were easily top five. If Dylan's got time to come through and do this, like, that's going to be an exceptional show. So thank you.
Oh, I'm blushing and wow, my dance card is very open. So I'm happy to jump on any interview. This is great. I'm feeling very wanted. Thank you.
Fabulous. So if I look at your life from like the standpoint of a casual observer, I see like Portland's creative class as like an orchestra, and I see you as like one of the city's most prolific conductors, right? Like so many of my favorite things about Portland, your fingerprints are on those things. Kickstand Comedy, Movie Madness, Ground Control. So that said, I kind of want to like dial it back to your creative origin story. Everybody knows about Kickstand, but I want to put a pin in that and tell me where the story of Dylan Reif starts. Were you born in Portland? Did you grow up here?
I grew up in the Midwest, like any modern Portlander, and I grew up in Minnesota, spent most of my, like, 20s in, I went to school in Ohio, and then lived in Chicago for most of my 20s, so that's definitely where my roots are, where I think I found a lot of my early collaborators and people that inspired me and excited me, and so that's definitely where it all began, is growing up in suburb of Minneapolis, not a lot going on. And so you kind of had to invent your own fun and not a lot of oversight too. And so you could get a little bit weirder and maybe for better or worse, like more experimental / destructive / all the things that you could get away with when there wasn't kind of an eye in the sky. Being too close.
Oh my gosh. Take me back.
It was great. I mean, it was terrible and it was great. It was all the things. So I feel very fortunate to have had a place where I really could fail and mess up and try weird stuff. And so I had a great friend group, and for whatever reason, probably many different planets lining, I was just able to take ideas that were pretty harebrained and try them out, whether it was getting my friends together and doing parody rap groups. We were the Jutang Clan.
Oh my God.
Jewish parody rap group that Thank God there's no recordings that you can find online, but if you want to listen offline, I'd be happy to.
Please, yes.
But that's like a great example of just what a stupid idea that we really were just able to, because we had a group of friends who really loved each other and were excited to try dumb stuff, mm-hmm. we'd come together and just make it happen and figure out how to make it happen. So our math teacher had a recording studio in his basement because he was awesome and very cool. And he just let a bunch of teenage boys be dumb in the basement for a while. And we had an EP and put it out there and got to just, you know, put up some shows. And it was a lot of not knowing any better that essentially... we didn't know that it was not supposed to be easy, or it was not supposed to be possible to do certain things. So we just tried to do them.
Right.
And there's a lot packed in there. And obviously I'm white, I'm male. There's certainly a privilege aspect to me being able to experiment in the way I did. Mm-hmm. But I am very grateful for that time and that space and that incubation. Right. So Minneapolis and then school in Ohio. I went to Antioch College, which was a really transformative place for me, radical liberal arts pocket school in the middle of a cornfield, which was very similar. Right. I could just dream up weird stuff, and I was an experimental theater major, and that's really where a lot of the tools I use now came from, and it took me a long time to come back. It took a lot of serving jobs and driving around the tiki transit bus for a tiki bar and bunch of like weird jobs, but I finally eventually came back to being able to utilize those tools and make it more of my primary job.
Right, but all that block of time what you're serving or you're driving, like all of that is very like that informs the process too, the creative process too. I have talked to so many like creatives, and those years where you're like just kind of in the struggle, just deep in the struggle, deep in the hustle, those formative years end up informing some of the best art that they create. Do you find that that's true for you as well?
Oh, 100%. Like the things I did 20 years ago, are still some of the things I'm most proud of.
Yeah.
That's where I started doing more like immersive theater. I didn't even know that's what it was, but I was compelled to do something with the version of myself that's online and the version of myself that I present in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really fascinated by AOL, America Online, for the young folks in the chat.
Throwback.
And but just being playing with identity. And so at Antioch, my senior project and the thing I worked on for most of my time there was a 4-year immersive game theater piece that I designed for one person, and they didn't know who I was. So we created a universe where this random person from the internet got a letter, or essentially I showed up at his house and gave him a book that I wrote with my friend Joe that was chronicling his life in the future and how he saved humanity. And so we told him that he was the savior of mankind in the future, and that he'd need to like learn everything in this book. And it was a book that was a hybrid of things we found out about him from searching online. And this was way before Google. This was before Facebook, YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So he just had a internet site for him and his friends that he made. He was like a teen nerd computer guy.
Right.
And it was a proto Facebook site. It was him sharing photos of him and his friends, and me and my buddy just stumbled on it really randomly, became obsessed with it. And we wanted to do something very unique and fun and mysterious for this one kid. And it snowballed into like a 4-year project that ended in a rock opera I wrote, where he becomes, we flew him out and he became the main character of the rock opera as it was happening. And he got to decide if he saved the future or not.
Wow.
So, again, unsupervised, did not understand that these things were going to be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And that was why I started attempting them, I think. I think if I had known how many roadblocks there are to making stuff practically, I never would have jumped into a lot of the pools that I have. So that was really a wonderful part of that, like, being in your salad days, struggle years. It was the center. It's the anchor. It was like what made me wake up in the morning and go to some crappy job.
Right.
Was the idea that I know after that, me and my buddies are going to get together and try to come up with very silly ideas that we can make happen.
Amazing. And that's the Velocity Gnome saga.
Yes.
That we're Velocity speaking about.
Gnome. Yes. It's the 20-year anniversary. It still has a lot of love in weird corners of the internet.
Congratulations.
And, thank you. We're working on a podcast project that hopefully will come out in the next couple of years that chronicles it. And so, yeah, so again, something I'm just super still very proud of. This kid who we took on an adventure, who we didn't know, after it was done, we like said hello to each other for the first time, not in these characters we were playing. And we've been friends for 20 years.
Well, so I would assume so. God.
He lives here in Portland.
And no kidding.
Yeah. So we hang out, go grab lunch. So I don't know. A lot of the people who are in my life, we've galvanized around some form of art we're passionate about or gameplay we're excited about or just these strange projects.
Right. So what I'm hearing is that, like, you yourself are a creative force. You have these ideas. You have this compulsion to do, to make, to create. But that creative community that you've established is as important as like what you're bringing. Is that, am I hearing that correctly?
Without a doubt. Nothing would get, I am the most ADD person you will ever meet in your life. From everything I've described already to what we'll be talking about in the future with Kickstand, nothing happens without community. Right. There's just no way. I would not be able to drive the bus. you need people who all bring their expertise and tools to the table.
Right.
And maybe they don't even know that that's their expertise yet, but when you all come together and the action items get divvied up, you find what you're drawn to. And I liked that you used the word compelled, because it is a compulsion.
Yeah.
Like doing this stuff for me, and I think for so many people, is compulsion. And it's changed and shifted as I've gotten older. You know, I'm like middle-aged dude now.
Right. Well, talk about that a little bit. Because like this, it's just the lane that you travel in, to me, I feel like that's the most fascinating lane. Experiential art, immersive art. It's something like, I feel like it's experiencing some manner of renaissance right now. We've got Meow Wolf, we've got Hopscotch, we've got all of these like different galleries that have kind of taken that on as well.
I think that people were really excited by it and fascinated by the possibility.
Yeah.
I think there's been a lot of like corporatization of it. And so with that has come a kind of a monoculture around what immersive quote unquote is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, there's always people making cool stuff, whether or not they want to qualify it as immersive. They're doing things that are just as exciting and interesting as anything else. I think it's just, we're starting the challenge of creating once it's so established is, well, if this is what it's supposed to be, what can I make that is speaking to my voice, or like what is it that I'm making that hasn't been done?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like Meow Wolf and a lot of people, that a lot of props, a lot of amazing stuff they're putting out, but there seems to be like movement towards a template of this is what an immersive theater show is supposed to be.
Sure.
And this is what and I'm excited by the things in the margins always more,
right?
Because those are people that are drawing without a coloring book. You know, there's no lines. Mm-hmm. And I think it's awesome to learn from the past. There are definitely things that I've done that I wish I had known more, and it would have been more interesting. Or, you know, a lot of the interactive stuff I was doing was in the Wild West days, like we talked about AOL.
Right.
It was before a lot of the modern thought and social mores and ethics around online and identity.
Sure.
So there were things that I did that I don't feel awesome about.
Mm-hmm.
During my experimentation, where I had to learn like, oh, I crossed the line and I hurt somebody, or that didn't feel good, or that doesn't feel like art, or that doesn't feel like comedy.
Right.
Because it's like, what am I even trying to say?
Yeah.
I did it. It was weird, but it had nothing to say. Like I had no intent behind it. So that's everybody's process, I think, at some level. But I think that there is stuff to gain from knowing what's out there. But I love seeing the art that's created and the projects that are created by people who that don't, you know, aren't super nerds about the history.
Right.
It's exciting to see what youth and Alpha and Z and all these generations are making, and without the use of like micro diving into every history on Wikipedia. Like, right. I just want to see what you make in a vacuum with your lived experience.
Right. You know, this
I'm
is
rambling
like,
to get there.
Love it. This is like a theme that comes up often is that just in my everyday life, that it's my assertion that is very rare that great art is created in a vacuum. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen.
Totally.
It happens, but I feel like it is very, very rare. I feel like in my experience, the best way to do it is with your community, is you find the people that lift you up and support, and you get that good back and forth. And now everybody's creating their best art, being the best versions of themselves because they've got this fabulous community to like bolster and support them.
Without question. Without question. And I just am, I truly think that it would be impossible to make and do the things that I have gotten to be a part of without the community that supported it and made it alongside me.
Yeah.
If I have a superpower in terms of creation, it is bringing people together.
Talk like, about that.
That is really, of all the things I will toot my horn about and do well, it is being a bridge between people who are like-minded or people who like complement each other mm-hmm. or complement the skills. And that is one reason that a lot of the things that I've done that have gotten across the finish line have happened, is because I was able to call everyone I know, put a call out, and see who wants to come together to make something.
Right.
Or find everyone who wants to volunteer, and we'll see where it goes. But we're all just doing it because we're passionate about it.
Right.
And then things change. Like Kickstand has went through many iterations.
Right.
We started as a DIY comedy space in the basement of a bike shop.
The evolution of Kickstand blows my freaking mind. How do you feel about, like, what has it been like for you after this conversation we're having about this grassroots movement that is kind of like where you're rooted in, is kind of like basic. I mean, I'm looking at the Kickstand website now and I'm like, oh, there are like multiple executives involved in this now. It's not just like a bunch of kids that came together to do something cool in the basement of a bike shop. It is a big business now. So from your point of view, like, what is that? How does that feel?
I think it's awesome. I love the growth of Kickstand, and I have a couple thoughts on this. I mean, it's amazing to see this thing that has grown up and like is walking on its own 2 feet now and has a new life, but that is a different space than it was 10, 12 years ago.
Totally.
Right. And change is absolutely inevitable. Growth is inevitable. There were just moments and growing pains of that evolution where I really wanted us to be a DIY space, but that's just not who we were anymore.
Right.
And so then it's like, well, who are we now? Well, we're a full nonprofit. And that means that there are more cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
There's more things that need to happen to create a sustainable organization. There's rent, there's salaries. There's a lot of things that are awesome in their own right. Like it's very rad to be able to make money doing what you love art-wise. It's very cool and very unique.
Yeah.
But along with that, it's a new era. It's like not the exact same democratic process or co-op process that we started with, and we have to shift the model and change. And I think my thought on that is, what do you want Kickstand to be today? Like, I think it's good for organizations to check in with themselves, and for whether you're a DIY space or a, you know, the Portland Art Museum, it's like, who are we today? Are we still serving our mission and values? And what do we want to make now in the phase that we're at now? That being said, now it's like, okay, well, who's the DIY space for comedy in Portland?
Right.
So you need the next generation too, to come and complement you, because as things change and grow, you're always going to need an experimental space.
Right.
And as Kickstand has moved a little bit away from being able to literally put up anything on its stage all the time, now there's a little bit more curation and there's more people who are involved in that curation. And now it's serving the training center in a lot of ways for people to learn tools, to do improv, stand-up, sketch, clowning, and make the stuff they want to make. But then when you're making it, where can you perform it here in Portland?
Right.
And so we need more spaces and venues and DIY spaces to continue to, it's like a ecosystem, right? And we need more of that to come up as well. So it's complicated, but I'm very grateful that Portland has created a space where Kickstand could grow and thrive.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful to all the people that have built it brick by brick and teach and perform and create there. They're doing, you know, there's no way that Comedy in the Park happens 12 years ago, right?
Right.
The growth that Kickstand has seen enabled it to grow to a place where it could make this really awesome large-scale stand-up show that's free in Laurel Earth Park, where thousands of people show up every summer. And that would not have been possible in the early phase. And so it's like give and take.
Right.
There's really cool stuff, and it's just who are you today and what do you want to create based on where your organization is now.
Right. What were the roadblocks that you had to address when you were like conceiving Comedy in the Park?
It was a process where obviously we're in the middle of a pandemic. It was certainly a, you know, necessity is the mother of invention type situation. So I had been going around to churches and drive-in theaters and been knocking on doors to see if we could find a safe outdoor space so that like the comedy community could still do what they're passionate about. And we as a community in Portland just needed joy. It was dark times, still very dark times, still need joy.
So
I had reached out to some awesome stand-ups, Tori Ward and Seth Allen, who we were just talking about what it would look like to do a safe outdoor show. And when I approached Portland Parks, they were really receptive and open to the idea.
Love.
So I learned a lot about permitting and I learned a lot about some really boring stuff. And there was always back and forth because we're a lot of people using a public space and I want to make sure that it's left better than it was when we got there.
Right.
And there's some things. So that has been an education process. So there was definitely some challenges there of just making sure that everyone was satisfied and happy. And once that got, the foundation for that got laid every year, it's been fairly wonderful.
Yeah.
As long as we can continue as a city to make it not cost prohibitive to have free outdoor events and free community events, we're in good shape. And right now, I think Comedy in the Park is a testament to that we are still in a place where we can have not have cost prohibitive challenges to putting on community events.
Right. So I recently saw Tommy Wiseau's newest movie, Big Shark. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yes, he was there, weird as ever, doing a Q&A. I'll never forget it. It is tattooed on my brain. Doing due diligence on, so there's a lot I know about you. I know a lot about your work, but I did not know that you made an escape room based on the movie, The Room, and that Tommy Wiseau did it. You have got to tell me what it was like to interact with Tommy while he was trapped in his own movie.
It was really bizarre. I can't really articulate, like, Tommy Wiseau is Tommy Wiseau. This is not an act. He had a handler on site who helped him stay on rails.
Oh my God.
But he was, I got contacted. I had started a interactive and immersive event company with a buddy of mine, and we were doing these large scale kind of what if you were in a movie. So we worked with the Stanley Film Festival and Overlook Film Festival to create these horror experiences where you just lived inside of them for a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's cup of tea. I did not think I was going to be doing so much horror stuff, but those are the people that really wanted immersive, like all hands on deck experiences. And so that was what started the company, and we were doing immersive experiences and escape room design. Mm-hmm. And I had done an escape room with Fantastic Fest in Austin for their festival that was like a satanic panic escape room.
Ooh.
And we turned their karaoke room into this really fun escape room that was kind of like, you know, rock and roll is the devil themed,
yes!
Which was very fun. And someone from that reached out to me about this really strange idea they had for creating an escape room of the room in the movie The Room, and that Tommy Wiseau would be the person trying to escape it.
Oh my God.
And so I was, of course, like, how do we make this happen?
Yes!
I love to design that. So I watched the movie a bunch. I took a bunch of notes on the layout of the room. And my favorite parts of the movie. Mm-hmm. And then I turned my favorite parts of the movie into puzzles for Tommy to try to solve. And so he was in the room with the two hosts from Smosh TV. It was Smosh helped fund it. And then they went through it. And Tommy, you know what? He got out of it eventually. It was very fun to see this man's reactions and just how his brain processes. And
right.
I mean, you could never write dialogue for that man.
I'm saying.
It's like otherworldly.
Yeah. He's not operating in this reality.
No. He has his own plane.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it was a really cool experience. It was fun. I got to, like, take pictures with him and hang out. And I have this really weird keepsake of a 30-minute video of him escaping his own movie.
Can we watch that video? Is that still on Smosh?
Yeah, I think it's still online. It should be some link on my website, I think, links to it.
So. All right, you heard it, listeners. You have got to check it out. We have got to do it. We love Tommy in Portland for some reason.
He's the best.
He's so weird, but I love it. I feel so inspired by him. We went, we saw Big Shark, did the Q&A, and afterwards I was so, like, wrapped up in the mystery of him. He submitted that movie for Oscar consideration. And I said, right then and there, this man is my hero.
Yeah.
I love it.
There is this weird relationship between perspective. As an artist, it's like you need a little bit of that total self-confidence.
Bordering
fake it till you make it.
Delusion, insanity. Almost.
Yeah, it's very delusional. Like, a part of you has to be delusional
fully
to make art happen and to make things.
Facts. Oh my gosh, that's wisdom right there.
There is like a spectrum. Like there is like a, you have to make sure the dial isn't too far to one side, right? That's really the thing, is if you're too delusional, we all know that person. And if you're not delusional, sometimes you don't think you can do it, which is stupid.
Right.
It's like, that is society and all these things that are really trying to, it's capitalism. It's,
right.
It's what it is. And so if your dial is low on delusion, turn it up a little bit. And if it's too high, there's not really much I can do for you. But hopefully you have friends or someone in your life who you trust who will tell you to turn the delusion down.
Have good friends.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of Success Stories. Learn more about Dylan at dylanreiff.com. That's Dylan, R-E-I-F-F.com. And follow Success Stories on Instagram at successstoriespdx. And you can find out more about me and my work at briannawheeler.com. Learn more about X-Ray and all of their offerings at xray.fm. All right, babes. I'll see you next week. And remember, until then, success is what we make it.